Okay, welcome back. It is 6:30 on the Money Night Show. We're going into our new segment entitled Outside In at Money. And this is where we're going to look at factors that influence local businesses, particularly those listed on the stock exchange. And to guide us through this conversation, I am here with Mr. Muelo Chivasakunda. Before he comes on, though, because I'm not going to do any housekeeping whilst we're talking, the studio lines are open for you to make phone calls during our conversation. That is 0211-252-227, 0211-252-227. The WhatsApp line for your text and voice notes is 0967-144-220, 0967-144-220. That's for your text and voice notes on WhatsApp. And of course, our social media pages all have the name MoneyFM Zambia, or simply use the hashtag MoneyNightShow. All right, Muelo, how are you doing today?
Hey, Chilo, how are you doing?
I'm fine, doing great. You. Yeah, how did traffic treat you today?
Ah, geez, you know, it's been a very, very long day. Traffic in Lusaka is just crazy, but it was a good one.
How has the fuel hike hit your pocket yet?
It's hit everybody's pocket, actually. Yeah, so I'm driving slow, but I guess, you know, the speed limit.
Are you telling the kids no borrowing the car on the weekend now?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you are coming to us from Financial Insights Zambia, not your first time on the station. But for those who are staunch listeners to my show only, please give us a little bit of a rundown of yourself and your company.
All right, thanks a lot, Chilo. Yeah, so hi, everybody. So my name is Muelo Chivasakunda. I'm the founder of Financial Insight. My business partner and I, Roman McKendy, set up Financial Insight last year. This was on the back of an interesting journey that I started, which was around analysis of companies that are listed on the Lusaka Stock Exchange. I started it as a blog when I was on the epilogue of my MBA with Manchester Business School. It got me curious because I looked around and there was no information about companies that were listed. And so I didn't even know how many companies were listed. And, you know, just out of curiosity, at the end of June of the year before last, I, you know, picked up my first annual report. And I believe it was Zambia Breweries because I do like an occasional pint. And I did an analysis.
Investing what you know, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, lo and behold, my first article, I shared it on my Facebook and, you know, I hit like over 200, you know, reads on it. And, you know, after that, as they say, the rest is history. But then, you know, fast forward to last year of March, Roman and I made the bold decision to actually just register the company. And, you know, we said to ourselves, we're onto something. This is very new territory and it's important that, you know, we harness this for what it is. And that's how Financial Insight, you know, got started. So we had a huge launch in May of last year. You know, the PS of Ministry of Commerce representing Margaret Monakatwe, Margaret Monakatwe, you know, came to the launch. And yeah, it was fantastic. We had like close to 100 people come through, and you know, we just, you know, set the financial space a buzz. I mean, right now we're averaging, like last month we did over 9,000 visits to the website. Financial news website, but you know, obviously centered around the Lusaka Stock Exchange. But then again, we also discuss things that are in what's known as the macro environment, which is the wider environment. And I guess, you know, it plays in well with your show, Chilo.
Yeah, I was about to say, we're siblings on the same mission, right? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Very good. So what, before we move on to the stories, so you said that you noticed a need for that type of news. What made you believe that? Because we had DSTV, people were already watching CNBC, we had the internet.
Absolutely. Right, yeah. Absolutely.
And I know that the Luce would produce, you know, the same reports with you analyzing. What was the real gap that you felt that you had to fill?
Right. So, you know, it's so funny because I'm not originally a finance person. I did computer science masters. And, you know, when I did my MBA, it just opened me up because I was always so curious. And, you know, doing case studies on, you know, these international MBAs, you get exposed to, like, you know, the FTSE, you know, 500 companies, companies that are listed on the New York Stock Exchange, companies listed, you know, on the London Stock Exchange, Tokyo Stock. All of these companies always had a beautiful narrative about how they run their businesses. And I wasn't seeing that in the Zambian space. No one was talking about, you know, the juggernauts of the Lusaka, you know, Lusaka Stock Exchange. Yeah. And we do have juggernauts, but, you know, nobody tells their stories. All you get to see is, you know, a summarized, you know, like summarized results, quarterly or half year results or annual results and a published annual report. And, you know, I you know, with the way we set up our company, because we actually made the bold decision of investing 23,000 kwacha, you know, of our money through a benefactor on the Lusaka Stock Exchange in a plethora of companies, about five of them.
Okay.
And these are all like in different industries so that we could actually get the front row seat at the annual general meetings so that we could also ask questions to these guys. So essentially, the gap, you know, the gap was pretty clear. Even attending those meetings, some of the questions that people would ask who were part of these companies, you could clearly tell that, you know, there are certain things that were in the numbers that they didn't really understand. Things like working capital. You show me, you know, financial statements, a balance sheet, an income statement, and I will tell you how this company is actually managing their money. So if you want to make an investment decision to pump money into this company, you would actually know, okay, fine, I think maybe this investment is more or less for the long term, this investment is for the short term.
So is that what the importance of a narrative is? It gets the people, it gets the market more, what's the word, excitable, more eager to actually be a player?
Absolutely. I think, you know what, there is obviously information asymmetry where like one side of the equation, of the investment story, or rather investment equation, has a lot more information than the other. Mm. The whole purpose of having like a stock market is that, you know, like information, and, you know, this is, you know, credit to Philip at SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. They are doing, you know, they've had a tireless job of ensuring.
We've been hearing lots of good things about the SEC in Zambia.
Oh, you know, no, the SEC are on fire.
Really?
I mean, they're doing their best. I mean, I've had a couple of folks, you know, sat down with a couple of folks, gone for their workshops. They're working tirelessly to get, you know, people to actually know about some of the different instruments that are there in order for companies to actually raise capital locally.
Yeah. Excellent. So let's just dive head in then. So we want to talk about the factors that influence local brands, particularly those on the Lusaka Stock Exchange. I have one question which has been burning, and I hope you can help me out with that, but I won't interrupt you. But just so you have in the back of your mind, I noticed that ShopRite Holdings practically has half of the market capitalization on our stock exchange. Is that true?
Well, yes, it is. And usually...
Is that normal?
No, it's perfectly normal. Yeah. It's perfectly normal. If the management team actually makes that decision, then it's you know, it's absolutely awesome. You'll notice that usually, like for your daily dose of information, you know, the Luce website, you know, on www.luce.co.za always has like a daily commentary summary, which will tell you like, you know, what the market cap is for that particular day. And you know, yes, ShopRite.
And they
does
actually do. This is mine with ShopRite, and this is without ShopRite.
Exactly. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, but what's also very interesting is that in as much as ShopRite actually dominates, I wouldn't, you know, make you lose sleep over that because, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, management team said, okay, you know what, if we're going to list on Luce, this is the number of shares that we're going to make available. Now, with X number of shares being available, depending on the number, it will determine what sort of price that, you know, you actually come in.
You
so a larger number of shares, like with ShopRite, you know, the stock price comes in fairly cheaper. But yes, in terms of market cap, it does obviously influence the market cap of the stock exchange.
All right, cool. So do you have any companies you want to look in?
Right.
Look
so
at for us?
Yes. Yeah. So for our debut show, Chilu, we are going to focus on two companies. I'd like everyone to visit my website, financialinsightzambia.com. So basically, this
how often are you updated? How often are you?
Well, you know, we try to get a story in there like almost every day. Okay. We don't want to inundate people with too many articles because essentially there's a lot of detail that, you know, and research that goes into these articles. So for us, our value proposition is value articles.
Oh, I'm bookmarking it right now. I'm going to read
please
them every
do,
day.
Please do. Yeah. So because when you come out of one of our articles, you'll actually be more knowledgeable about what's going on about, you know, that simple company. We're just not, it's not just verbatim of what's said. It's actually analysis and financial analysis for that matter. So you actually come out more empowered than you were before you started reading the article.
Well, then let's hear it then.
Okay, great. So this week, my focus was on AEL and Airtel. Now, I'll start with AEL. AEL, beautiful company. They are based in Muflira, and they are in the mining sector. They supply explosives to the mining sector, so they're part of the value chain of the mining industry. Now, you know, recently they published through Luce, because the Securities and Exchange Commission always insists that some of the rules insist that you publish your half year and end of year financial results. Usually the half year results tend to be unaudited. So just recently they published their half year results, and it's looking pretty good.
Okay.
Interestingly, they announced an interim dividend. Now, essentially, what that means is that there'll be money in the bank for investors of this company. Okay. But then again, if you're an astute investor, you'll be thinking, okay, let me look at last year's results. Was there something similar? Unfortunately, there wasn't. But then rewind the clock a further 2 years, you'll actually discover that they did something similar. So they're actually having a pretty good year.
What does that mean when they skip a year of interim dividends then?
Well, catch is, AEL has been paying a dividend every year. So sometimes companies, if they've had like a good run for the first 6 months, what they'll do is that they'll declare a dividend. You know, they want to share
the
profits. Yeah. So so that now you obviously have to keep an eye on Q3 and Q4 because then that means that whatever the company is going to do in that quarter will determine what the overall dividend will be for that end of year. So now, if we look at AEL, they are in the mining sector, and one of the things that is quite interesting, when some of this information is published, don't look at it at face value. Always read in between the lines, and which is what we do at Financial Insight. So when we looked at it and we said, okay, you know what, this is great. They've announced an interim dividend. We looked back at the previous year, and it looks like their finance director is doing a couple of interesting things.
Okay.
For example, Esther Johnson, who's their CFO, has been seen to be managing their working capital extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
And now, essentially, what that means is that when you compare current assets and current liabilities, this is the money that is owed, that is due within 12 months, and the money that you have, or assets that you have, that you can liquidate.
That's moving around.
Exactly, the money that's actually moving around. You actually see that she, from the same time last year, she's able to move her asset test, which is basically your assets over liabilities, from 4.2 to 7.2. What does that mean? She's got more money to pay her suppliers with, and she's managing her money very well. So that means that the company is getting financially healthy. So if you're a person that's interested in buying stock, you'd want to be looking at this stock to say, look, I think what Esther Johnson's doing is actually a fantastic job.
So it's not too late, because I know AEL listed it a couple of years ago, quite a few years.
Yes,
ago.
They do, and Luce will open it up to you. I mean, the stock exchange through your broker allows you to access, because it's like any marketplace. You buy and sell shares. You buy and sell goods. In this case, it's commodities, which are the shares in these shares or ownership in this particular company. But then now back to the narrative around it, right?
Okay.
So even in the statement itself, Esther Johnson also goes on and says, look, you know what? There's actually been low productivity, right? And there's also the continuous fluctuation of the US dollar. I'm sure noticed that the kwacha has kind of taken a bit of a hit in Q2 and Q3. And obviously going into Q4, we're not too sure about the stability. However, what that has done is that it's actually influenced movement on their income statement. And if you look at some of their exchange gains, which they've actually made, they're quite substantial. And I believe that in as much as there's been slowdown,
bet against the kwacha doing that?
Not really. Mm. It's because, obviously they've probably got, contracts. And, the catch is, for us, a financial side, we're outside looking in based on the data.
Course,
so we would assume that, most of their contracts, because this is explosives, and maybe some of the materials come from South Africa. So they'll probably bill them at USD. So if the kwacha then does something, it slides, it means that, they'll obviously experience exchange gains.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, so is that your narrative on AEL?
Yes, that's my narrative
was
on AEL.
Was that a personal question? Was that one of the five your company invested in?
No comment. You'll have to visit the website to find out which companies we visited.
Good,
yeah.
Very
and
good.
I don't even know whether AEL are paying you any money to advertise. So yeah.
Not at all. All right. Okay. I'm going to let you catch a breather. We're going to go on a break. So guys, as I said, phone lines are open. 0211-252-227 to call in. Our WhatsApp line is 0967-144-220. Send in your texts or voice notes at 0967-144-220. and our social media pages are all under the name Money FM Zambia. Riveting conversation. We're going to continue it after. Let's give it a minute and then we'll be right back. I'm enjoying this. Stay with us.
For business on the go, visit www.moneyfmzambia.com to watch, stream, and download various programs from anywhere in the world.
All right, we are back. It is 10 to 7 already. I was supposed to have Mwela for 30 minutes. I have just signed a contract with him. He's extending his time with us, which I'm happy about.
Oh my goodness, pro bono. It's hard.
Hey, it's Money FM. The money will come at some point.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Money FM, the phone line's open if you want to reach out and talk to us. 0211-252-227 if you want to call in. 0967-144-220 is our WhatsApp line for text and voice notes. That's 0967-144-220. And our social media pages all have the account name MoneyFM Zambia, or simply use the hashtag Money Night Show. All right, Mwela, so you had told us about AEL and you mentioned you had one more company you would like to give us your financial insight on.
Absolutely. And all these stories that I'm talking about are available on the website itself. Financialinsightzambia.com or fizambia.com. Jason called us Fizz. Yeah, so we like to call ourselves Fizz. So the second company, Airtel, telecoms
industry.
That's
a big one, yeah.
Yeah, this is a big one. I mean, used to be the juggernaut in the telecom industry. MTN came in and, you know, they did wonders and, you know, dusted them off the top slot.
When they did their IPO, they were still Celtel, right? Were they already Airtel?
Yes, it was, it was Celtel and then, yeah.
Was it
after
Zain,
that,
actually?
No, it was actually Zain, actually.
Was it Zain, eh?
I think it was, yes. It was Zain, yeah. But then, obviously, they changed the name with Bharat Airtel coming.
Yeah, exactly,
coming in. So they've just also recently published their half-year results. Uh-huh. And according to their statement, and, you know, this is a company that has board chair Monica Msonda, and one of my personal friends, Jito, on the board, is a venture capitalist, and it's obviously very interesting. I mean, I did a story on them when they both came on board, because I believe Airtel made a specific decision terms of bringing them on board that would show what sort of strategy they would actually be pursuing.
I was going to ask you about that. I'll ask you at the end, but I wanted to ask about, because many people were probably thinking, but wait, those aren't Zambian companies. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask about like what it means when you list on on a country's stock exchange, but we'll talk about that.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So basically the industry has seen 76% market penetration, and you know Airtel is obviously proud to be, you know, number two in this market, handing over the number one gauntlet to MTN.
Really?
But anyway, that's a feud that the two of them actually have. Their customer base currently stands at 5.36 million, according to their recent results. Now, what is quite interesting about the half-year results is that they've now declared that, you know, their revenue is down by 7.91%. And they're attributing this, you know, to competitive intensity. But then Airtel have only got themselves to blame. Epilogue of 2017. What did they decide? They decided to start a price war. They cut prices left, right, center. Everybody was super excited. They had a huge promotion. However, when I look closely, Airtel actually had more muscle when it came to the technology. So they did an upgrade on their entire network that allowed them now to have, well, fastest 3G or 4G. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, essentially what they did was that they reinvested in their backbone and ensured that, you know, they had more expansive and much more advanced, much more advanced technology. So to then now enter into the price war, what essentially that meant was that now they're going to now lower their prices in order for them to now regain their slot. And usually companies will enter into price wars because they're more concerned about market share than the profit.
It's but usually, you feel Airtel shouldn't have been concerned about their market share?
They should actually, because it's a volumes game. It's all about the numbers. So, you know, that's why, you know, like even when they publish their, you know, some of these, the half year and the end of year results, they'll always want to tell you what their customer base is, because their customer base is their strength. You know, so that way, you know, you can do the math. That is how they, mm-hmm. you know, they make their money. Mm-hmm. So now, when it came to, you know, their top line, obviously it took a bit of a haircut. Now, by top line, I mean their revenue. Yes, so, yeah. you know, when it came to profit after tax, though, it was up by 39.89%. Now, this one was obviously very curious. How does a company that lowers its revenue, has lower revenue, manage to increase its profit after tax? That's because of operational efficiencies. Now, operational efficiencies is obviously a very, very big phrase, and there's a lot of things that actually go into there. Chances are that, you know, some companies would implement measures that that include, you know, cost cutting. Some companies will also, I'm not saying that Airtel did it, but then, you know, some companies will also look at
basically the what they call the overhead section.
Exactly, yes, the overhead. So essentially, so they managed to successfully trim down. So you can tell that their CFO there is, you know, doing a lot of financial, you know, financial
that's
magic.
Really, is that really making more money though?
Well, I mean, look, in terms of revenue, yes, that's not making more money. But then at the end of the day, investors in companies are looking at the bottom line. So if I'm an investor in this company, I'll be asking the management team, say, no, look, okay, all I'm concerned is bottom line. Are we making more profit than we used to before? They're just saying that, you know, they make at half year they're 13 almost 40% profit increase compared to the same time last year. So
have some investors who are like, well, you cut down on your overheads. Are you still going to manage to run the business as you have been
That's
doing?
That's true. But then again, you also have to you also have to look back at some of the reports that they've actually issued.
Okay.
A couple of years back, Airtel made a very bold decision to now sell off, and apparently this is something that's happening across the industry. You know, telecom companies are actually offloading their towers. Now, what that means is that in terms of overheads, you actually see a huge reduction because they don't no longer have to buy fuel or, you know, transportation to manage all of those masts. All they have to do is, you know, just sign leases with companies that actually manage those masts. In short, allow the guys that understand and know how to manage that business better. That way, you can contain your costs.
You focus on what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. Does your report say anything about the internet wars between the companies?
No, not really. It focuses more now. It then goes on and talks about, you know, like how their asset base performs. So they marginally increased their assets, but however, of note was the 100% increase in their intangible assets. Now I have to remind listeners that, you know, at the moment, this is a half-year report. We'll have to wait for, we'll have to wait another 6 months for them to publish their end-of-year report. For the simple reason that half-year report tends to be condensed; it's a one-pager. Okay. Whereas at the end of year, when the auditors come in and they audit, their financials, we'll actually have notes, so we'll actually be able to break down what exactly these intangible assets are. Because when I see intangible assets,
So
they were able to grow it. So I'm thinking, so intangible assets maybe goodwill.
In my mind, the first thing that came up is goodwill.
It's goodwill, exactly, but there's also other things. It could be they could have bought patents.
I was about to say, could it be like rights and patents?
Exactly, rights and patents. Exactly. Chilo, you know this. I want you to come and write for financials.
It's Money FM. I have to know this. It's a Money Night Show.
Absolutely, yeah. So now moving along. One of the things that I also noted was that, you know, for shareholders, they'll be quite pleased because just like with AEL, at half year, they've also declared a 1.2 kwacha interim dividend. Okay. So it's looking pretty good. And right now, our estimate for their forward EPS is at 2.52, which will come in, you know, much better than how their EPS was last year.
So you don't have to explain that one.
Okay, so EPS is basically your earnings per share, which is basically the profit divided by the number of shares that are listed. So that's how the money gets, you know, kind of
gets shared around.
So, you know, so essentially now, obviously, what in terms of external forces, which is what we'll focus on, the macro environment, the challenge that Airtel might have is obviously currency volatility. This is obviously a huge, huge concern because obviously there's services that they buy, for example, onward internet, because we don't produce internet in Zambia. Yeah. So they probably have, data access from outside that they actually pay for, which is paid for in dollars. So if you're now selling airtime in kwacha, it means that, you know, like any losses in the value of the currency will impact your ability to buy, you know, some of the inputs into into
your product.
Exactly, yeah. into your yeah. product. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah. So essentially, currency. I'm obviously a bit concerned at how you know the CFO is going to manage this. But it'll be interesting at end of year when they finally report their end of year results.
So, how does Airtel raise their prices? How do telcos raise their prices?
Right. So now, okay. So now, by raising prices, do you mean like the tariffs
or airtime is always going to be?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. No, they can't do that. But you know what? One of the things I've noticed, like especially with these two top players, and you know, credit to the technology departments of these two guys, they've introduced what I like to call diversity in terms of like the products they think. So they've got economies of scope. Now, with economies of scope, it means that they're able to leverage, and that's one of the beauties of concentrating on your core business. Mm. So forget, you know, managing, towers and like some telecoms in Zambia still want to own 100 towers. But anyway, we won't get into that. But anyway, the catch is, you know, these guys have been able to center around, around technology. Mm. So when you now look at the different product offerings, they're able to bundle certain products together. So, for example, I'm on MTN. I could buy, you know, data for 5 kwacha, but then it probably comes in with a couple of minutes. Basically, those are economies of scope because they have the technology that supports all of this. So, in an event when you've got a threat of currency, you know, currency volatility, you might want to look at, you know, like the equipment that you have and find out what additional products you can start to sell. Sure. Because, like in their case, they can't necessarily increase rates. In fact, if anything, it's highly competitive. Anybody that moves, because the price to actually change product is actually very, very minimal. So, and although barriers of entry are fairly high, you know, due to licensing requirements from Zikta.
Even though we do have a new one coming on, I hear.
Yes, we do. But I don't have any information about them. But they haven't yet, hit the ball rolling, they're in for a dogfight.
They are.
Yeah, they are in for a dogfight.
Excellent. What is my time here? 7:00. All right, you want to go on another small break and then we'll come back and talk about the wider factors that influence the market. All right.
Absolutely.
So this is the Money FM radio station, 93.7. This is the Money Night Show. I'm here with Muelo Chibesakunda. I am Chilu. If you want to join this riveting conversation about the markets, please do. The phone line is 0211-252-227. 0211-252-227. The WhatsApp line is 0967-144-220. And our social media pages are all Money FM Zambia, or simply use the hashtag Money Night Show. We're going to come back after the break. I'm going to continue talking with Muelo about the factors that influence local companies in general. He gave us an eagle-eyed scope on two. I want to ask him his thoughts on the market in general. You've heard Ali and I talk about how we've got so much, me and my partner, we generally talk about how we've got, you know, in America, those are the most fun markets to watch.
Absolutely.
Any small thing, you know, you hear, oh yeah, this company's gone down 4%. In fact, today I've got a story talking about those guys are having like Halloween heebie-jeebies on the market in America right now.
Yes.
My favorite one of my favorite companies, Twitter, is almost hitting minus 10% on their stock. So I want to ask about, will that day ever come in our country? Like, what is it in your opinion that affects our markets? What do you see happening in future? So we're going to get into that after the break.
Absolutely.
So yeah, please join him for that. And he's also going to be with me on some commentary for news stories. We are back. It is after 7 on the Money Night Show. I am here. It's in studio with Muelo Chibesakunda. I just need him to lower his microphone for me.
There you go.
All right. So, yeah, guys, to participate in our discussion, 0211-252-227-0967-144-220. And our social media accounts, that's Facebook and Twitter, all go by the name Money FM Zambia, or use the hashtag Money Night Show. So Mola, you are here from Financial Insight Zambia, which is a gem of a company I'm just discovering now, but I will be one of your avid readers for sure. I'll probably be talking about a lot of the stories that you guys will be dropping, so prepare yourself for that.
Thank you.
You're going to be with us every Thursday, right? Or at least for a couple of Thursdays.
Yes,
to come,
a couple of Thursdays, and I'll try to bring on board some of my team.
Exactly. I was about to ask.
Yes, I've got 8 analysts that are with me. These are beautiful, you know, young Zambians who actually believe.
How did you find them? Like, how were they just interested? Like, well, like
they,
what is
they
that
actually
about?
They actually found me, and you know what's quite interesting was like the first one that I signed on was Musa. You know, she was she's an investment analyst. I sat down with her, and you know, she loved our story, and she just wanted to let off some steam. And then after that, Sophie came on board, Alan came on board, Muma came on board.
So was there like an education period for them? Like, you teach them how to write, teach them how to analyze?
Not really. The interesting thing is that, not that we're snobbish or anything, but, you know, all of them have got master's degrees. And I feel
that helps, when
you have a postgraduate degree like that, and the quality of degrees that these guys have is just simply amazing.
Yeah.
Coming to write for Financial Insight for them was just so easy, because when they looked, and you know, Roman's always making fun of me. He's like, you know, Muelo, you live and breathe Financial Insight. But I just told him, look, I mean, it's something that, you know, like I believe in, and the rest of the team believes in. And Roman and I are very, very passionate about what we're doing.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent. Well, I can't wait when you turn your insight onto yourselves, but anyway, we'll look into that.
Absolutely.
So, the main thing that we brought you here for on Outside In, you gave us a bird's eye view, or a laser type view on two companies. I want to ask you your broad view of the market, how our market is doing, how you think what events are making it move? What events do you think are going to shift things in our market, in our business environment right now?
Absolutely.
Give us that insight.
Yeah. So essentially, obviously, one of the challenges that our market has obviously faced is one. I look at things as such as information.
Yeah.
There's a lot of information asymmetry. Even though there's information out there, Luce make it a point to publish quarterly, half year results, annual results, quite regularly, or as and when they're available. They also publish information about movements in terms of directors, the sort of things that an astute investor in the stock market would want to be looking at, because that now affects the investment case for you, and it affects your investment decision on how to actually create your portfolio. But the challenge that we have is that when most of this information comes out, either it's not I wouldn't say easily accessible. One of the mediums that Luce uses is obviously the internet. So you'd have to visit their website. Mm. But then also they are also assisted by the brokers. However, people, once they sign up, you tend to find that some people will not even visit their broker on a regular basis and have a conversation with it. Mm. With Financial Insight, we've invested in 5 companies, and we talk to our broker like literally every other week.
Ah.
For the simple reason that we want to know how our investment is performing.
Do the brokers know? They have this information?
The brokers have this information, and they're mandated to actually tell all the people that come through and all the ones that they actually help to actually invest.
Okay.
Another challenge that we have is that on the one side, people tend not to be patient, but not fully understanding what the registration process is for you to actually be a player on the stock exchange to be able to trade. Now it's a painless process, and I was telling Jason yesterday that it's literally within 3 days your account can actually be set up and you're actually able to trade. However, on the flip side, you've got the small matter of Luce not advancing its technology as fast as times have actually moved.
Exactly.
I'm waiting for a time when we could actually do online transactions off the internet. I mean, I've thrown this challenge to Luce on several occasions.
Yeah.
However, last year, towards the end of last year, they'd actually made an investment in upgrading some of their software. So I see some rather exciting times, and in terms of creation of businesses, there could be businesses that revolve around that. And I would not be surprised if Roman and Muelo actually come up with a crazy idea and actually start trading online trade.
Yeah, well, for this week, particularly today, I was going to talk about financial, or I am going to talk about when you leave financial inclusion and particularly mobile banking. And we have seen a rise in exactly what you're talking to across Africa. They are trying to get more people involved in all the financial dealings that are happening. And, you know, mobile is online, obviously, are one of those things which they're using to open that up. Do you think democratizing the process like that is the right way to go? Because I'm sure some people would not, you know, they just won't see it like that. They're like, you know what, this is a big deal. You have to go to an office and talk to somebody. Do you want to, you know, do you think it's okay to bypass that process and just be able to do what you want to do on your phone? You want to invest in a company, buy this much. You don't find that a little reckless, a little irresponsible? You think it's fine?
Not necessarily, because I feel that that's also one of the core things of innovation. I did a story recently of the Zona, Brett and Brad McGrath. Fantastic chaps. You know, I've worked with them. You know, they're super awesome. They've raised a ton of money, and they set up Zona. Essentially, they looked at the banking system. They looked at the financial inclusion situation in the country, and they gave us Zona. All of a sudden, you've got Zanaco, you've got Zamtel, you've got Airtel Money, you've got MTN Money, all jumping in. Why? Some two guys, after exchanging SMSs,
they disrupted the whole system.
So, yeah, it's democratizing it is absolutely great. But then the key thing here and the underlying thing here is enhanced and embracing technology. Through technology, we can achieve so much.
Okay. Now, speaking of democratization and information, we had the national budget reading this past, when was that? Was it this month or last month?
Yes.
I've been looking at that. The other day I was looking at what she had to say about health, what she had to say about the energy sector. So do you have any insights for me on what she had to say about the finance and business sector?
Right. So my analysts are still dissecting
they're
through it.
They're pouring over it.
Yeah, they're pouring over it. I mean, it's a huge, huge budget. But I mean, obviously, our angle is obviously focused more on how this budget actually affects businesses at large. And what was curious to me was, you know, some of the events that were post the budget. One in particular, on the Monday morning, former Minister of Finance was hosted by Jason Kazlemani of KPMG at a breakfast at Intercontinental, whilst Margaret was across town attending a Deloitte and Touche event. She was actually meant to come there, but I think, you know, because, you know, they were both, you know, she was invited to two events.
And she
chose the Deloitte.
Actually, that's the analysis I've been using, the Deloitte.
Exactly,
one.
But, you know, the KPMG one was actually pretty, pretty good. And we've got the analysis on the website itself. But however, it's the roster of speakers that were on the plenary session that Jason actually brought together that was pretty curious. I mean, he brought together the likes of Lovinda Hazoka. He's an economist. I think he does a lot of publishing. Never met him. He also brought on board Leonard Mwanza, who's the CEO of the Bankers Association of Zambia. Then also a personal favorite of mine, you know, Chipego Zulu. She's the young CEO of Zambia Association of Manufacturers. She's a woman to actually watch, because she's she's knocking on doors and, you know, causing, you know, like a lot, you know, a storm for, you know, like regulators to ensure that, you know, she's, you know, legislators to ensure that, you know, manufacturing is top priority. And then you also had the veteran Noel Nkoma, who's also an economist and, you know, CEO of Better Now Finance. But, you know, what we got from that was, you know, obviously these are guys that were concerned about some of the taxes, introducing new taxes, especially for the private sector. However, they were pretty pleased that it was actually a pro-business budget. And this is, you know, this is guys you know, like represent different facets of the economy. So that was really great. Obviously, the other topical issues was obviously the introduction of sales tax to replace VAT. Now, that's also it's a very interesting story, because when you look at the VAT and, you know, the debacle that's been around it, is that, you know, you've got companies that, you know, have got huge claims for VAT refunds, but then again, there's also this trust issue that, you know, like ZRA, as you know, you guys are not really proving that you really exported this stuff. But then, you know, essentially what Honorable Margaret Manukato is obviously trying to achieve with this budget is, you know, she wants every dime to be collected, every way to be collected. So, you know, it's...
We've seen some businesses jump and cry foul at that, though.
Yes, true.
Particularly, we're watching a whole argument with the Chamber of Mines and the mining sector and the government play out in the media.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily messy, but it's not a good look.
No, it is. Yeah. It's not a good look, but I think, as a financial insider, I actually feel that, you know, the argument is a tad bit premature, because they were actually very specific in terms of how they're going to roll it out. It's not going to be rolled out overnight or 1st of January. They're actually going to do it in phases, because there's a small matter of, you know, like ZRA paying off the backlog, and that's something something that government's obviously committed to to actually sorting out. So it's what I'll be curious about is obviously to understand how they're actually going to phase this. And one of the things my report has actually picked up at the same event was obviously Felix Mtati, Honorable Felix Mtati, talking about issues of fiscal fitness. And fiscal fitness is underlined essentially us making sure that that we're following we're following things to the letter. We are now if you've got a budget, you follow it to the T. Accountability, auditing is in place, etc. Just making sure that accountability is number one in order for us to meet all the expenses and that kind of thing.
Do you think that gets sacrificed when you make a pro business, a pro private sector environment in your economy?
Do you think
the public sector has to be sacrificed for that?
No. I don't think the public sector is actually being sacrificed. I feel that obviously around this there's the need for more information, and only through more information are the public sector able to understand how they can play part in the whole equation, because to be honest, yes, government is the big buyer, and most private businesses will at some point in time have to do business with government. But if there is no fiscal discipline, it'll be folly for private sector to now start making certain projections based on government not following to the letter, for example, like the national budget. If they're saying X amount of money is going to be thrown into this particular sector, if you're in that particular sector, you need to be folding your sleeves and making a strategy that is going to be around that, so you can actually reap the benefits of the money that will be poured into that sector.
Excellent. Okay, I think I've stressed you out enough for now.
You have. You're not paying me enough.
Hey, well, maybe I can pay you in kind. Do you want to tell us your social media platform?
Right,
website and so on and so forth?
Yes. So the website, financialinsidezambia.com or fizambia.com. And my Twitter handle is MWE15, which basically has our, at MWE15. And then we're also on LinkedIn as well. So most of our articles are shared on Twitter, Facebook. We've got a Facebook page, Financial Inside Zambia. So please look it up and like the page. We need more likes.
Indeed. I will be an avid follower. I already bookmarked the page whilst we were talking. So
fantastic.
Yeah, expect a lot of quotes from me. I hope I won't have to send you royalties for that, but I will be quoting you a lot.
No, absolutely.
So if you could just stick around with me for about 10 more minutes till 5:30, I just want you to comment on two stories in particular.
Not a problem.
That I'm about to go. We're not even going to go to break. I'm just going to jump straight in.
Okay, great.
So a news story that broke earlier this afternoon actually was that the Zambia Eurobonds fell as the agency Fitch cut Zambia's rating further into, what Bloomberg describes as junk. So I read a little bit of this at the beginning, but for those who didn't hear it this earlier today, in fact, speaking of which, before I get right into this, the studio lines are open if you want to call in, 0211-252-227, if you have any questions and comments on what we've discussed up to now and what I'm going to discuss for the next couple of minutes. You are welcome to 0967-144-220. That is our WhatsApp line for your texts and voice notes. And the social media pages on Facebook and Twitter are all Money FM Zambia. So maybe actually I am going to go on a break. Okay, we're going to go on a 1 minute break just to get our stuff together. So if you guys want to send us anything, now's the time to do so. When we come back, we're getting into my lead story today. It wasn't going to be, but it just broke today. I want to ask Mrela what he thinks this means for us. Is that Fitch, the ratings agency, financial ratings agency, downgraded Zambia's rating to a B-. So now Zambia is rated a B, a B, how would I put it, on a B level by the three main financial rating as agencies. So I'm going to tell you exactly
what
that means.
That. Yes, exactly. We'll get into that.
I need help, clearly. I need help.
You do.
All right, we're going to be back after the break.
Okay.
For business on the go, visit www.moneyfmzambia.com. to watch, stream, and download various programs from anywhere in the world.
All right, so Fitch Ratings cut Zambia deeper into junk on Thursday, citing a widening budget gap and a faster-than-expected increase in debt levels. The country's Eurobonds slid. The company lowered its long-term foreign currency assessment to B-, which is the sixth highest junk rating, with a negative outlook, the same level as Standard & Poor's, another credit ratings agency, which has a positive outlook on the debt. Moody's cut its assessment to CAA1 in July. Now, this is what I was really interested in. So, Zambia's 2019 budget presented by Finance Minister Mark Manakatwe last month laid out what they say, what they call significantly less ambitious fiscal consolidation effort. All right? Compared to targets her ministry set early in September, Fitch said. The country has also consistently failed to trim the budget gap. All right, so let me skip down to a conclusion, then we'll get into the actual nitty-gritties. So what are the implications of this? So it says that yields on Zambia's 1 billion of euro bonds due 2024 rose 30 basis points to 16.61 by 2:50 p.m. in the capital. Fitch also said that upward revisions to fiscal deficits and government debt have weakened the credibility of the government's fiscal targets. It has delayed fiscal consolidation, and high debt will weigh on macroeconomic stability. I mean, this reads like a bad report from a teacher. You know what I mean?
It sure does. It sure does.
The rapid increase in external debt has put the country at high risk of distress, according to the IMF, and has been the main reason Zambia so far failed to secure a bailout from the Washington-based lender. Right. Forex reserves are close to the lowest since 2010. All right, so there we go. Well, here's a comment from Cesar Chelo from Zipper. Yeah. He says, the loosening of the targets means that the government is not actually applying austerity. It's an expansionary fiscal policy stance. Many people are wondering, to what extent is this sustainable? How does this actually get corrected? And I have some thoughts on that as well. But yes, let's begin from here. Who are these people? Who is Fitch? Who's this guy?
Okay, so we're going to have a credit rating 101. Mm. Okay, so I always like simplifying things. Mm. You know, for a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, chances are that you've at some point in time gone out and gotten a loan. Mm. And at some point in time, the bank will obviously talk about, we need to make sure that, you know, like the CRB, Credit Reference Bureau, clears you. Essentially, what a rating agency does is that it just looks at, it does a credit rating assessment in terms of the credit worthiness of the borrower.
Okay.
And credit worthiness meaning that, okay, are you overborrowed or underborrowed? Mm.
If you're overborrowed, can you pay back?
Can you pay back? Yes. Yeah. So are you high risk or low risk? So hence, this is where all these ratings agencies would actually come in. Now, if countries are dealing with you know, like international lenders, etc., they become targets of interest by these companies. Mm. So you've got the big three credit agencies: Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch. So essentially, what these guys will do is that they'll come in if it's a country audit, and they also do company ratings as well. They'll come into the country and look at things like you know, your fiscal policies, your budgets, you know, everything that you know, economic indicators like your inflation rates, etc. Mm. And then they'll do an assessment in terms of, you know, like the country's debt levels as well. So that way it gives them an indication in terms of what the credit worthiness is of that particular government, particular country. But you know, needless to say that, you know, these are all you know, opinions, and that's why you've got three of them.
Yes, exactly.
There are other ratings agencies, but you've got three of them, and, you know, yes,
opinions based along very ideological lines.
Exactly,
right?
Yes. Yeah. And they've got set parameters that they actually use in order to assess. So because, you know, why would you have three when, you know, one rating agency. Yeah. So they each of these agencies will have their own set of parameters that they actually
look at. And I'm guessing different lenders take stock in different opinions of the different agencies.
Absolutely.
So apparently this rating is enough, or like their assessment is enough to keep Zambia from securing another loan from the IMF, or is it from the World Bank?
Well, so in terms of their statement, so they've now downgraded the rating. This is obviously
and this
on
is off the back of what we were talking about.
Exactly.
We thought it was a very pro business.
Yeah. Yes. No. It actually is, but it doesn't affect Honorable Margaret Manukato's statement whatsoever. It is still pro business. However, we have to now look at the genesis of all of this. Mm. Obviously, you know, with our discussions, the protracted discussions with the IMF, and sentiment, and we did an article around the importance of sentiment. Unfortunately, unfortunately, there's been a lot of, you know, alarming statements that have gone out, which obviously hasn't helped matters. And, you know, when a country's in focus, they, you know, there's a lot of interest that goes around it. I've had chances to chat with people that are in the financial journalism, you know, industry. And, you know, one of the things that I was able to pick out is that, you know, we always have to be very careful where we're getting our sources of information. Mm. You can't publish, you know, information, you know, that's based on rumor. It's always important to, you know, go to the horse's mouth. So, like in this case, sure. We always engage Minister of Finance and ask them, you know, Chileshe Kandeka, you know, is a good source for information and on what the official position is. However, in our case, you know, that hasn't received the sort of visibility. Mm. And I think the PR machine actually needs to do a bit more work, because it's like a bit like damage control. Now, obviously, there has been the concern
of... You're not worried
of
being labeled pro-government when you do that?
No, not really. I'm looking at the facts. You know, the facts that are on the ground. Okay. It is true that, you know, they haven't done a good job in terms of the PR machine, obviously coming a bit late to, you know, to the plate.
Yeah.
However, on the other side, when you have a rating such as the one that we have, essentially what the ratings agencies are saying is, you know, look, the country's in under threat of debt distress. Meaning that when the loans come due, we'll have a problem. But lo and behold, Honorable Mona Khatri herself made the statement in Parliament to say that, no, look, we haven't defaulted on a single loan. That's the sort of information that, you know, like the credit agencies actually need to know about. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the horn that needs to be blown the loudest. Yeah. And, you know, it's a pity that that's not the information that, you know, like that gets mostly talked about. But, you know, that's another story. So anyway, back to the ratings agency. Uh-huh, you know, so obviously these three guys, you know, rose, you know, they're significance obviously rose in popularity around about the last financial crisis of 07 and 2010.
Yes,
and, you know,
yes.
curiously enough, you know, some of the ratings that came out of that. For example, all the big three came under intense scrutiny following the global financial crisis because they gave favorable pre-crisis ratings to insolvent financial institutions like Lehman Brothers. So then again, these are the same guys, fast forward, who come today and say, no, Zambia, but I'm not saying
that. It makes me feel less insane because that was exactly the rant I was going to have.
Exactly, yeah. So like I said, it's opinion, but you see, that's the thing about how we reported financial insight. We do not ignore the past.
Yes,
we bring the past to the present. Because
yes,
you have
can't.
To look at the story in its entirety. So I'm not saying you ignore the big three's ratings of the country, but then again, I'm saying don't ignore you know, like things that
take
have happened in the past.
In context.
Take everything in context. And you know, after that, make your decision.
Yeah, yeah. I love that you say that because I was having that discussion as well, and I was wondering, should I bring this up on air? Because I'm like, yes, it seems as if our memories are so short. This is the 10-year anniversary of the fall of Lehman Brothers.
Yep.
And I was like, if I recall that Lehman Brothers was giving a thumbs up, you know what I mean? The whole way. Yep. And yet it happened. And then, like, you know, this man, so they start saying things like, you guys need to tighten your belts. We're not seeing the austerity that we should be seeing.
Right.
And I'm like, have we forgotten what austerity did immediately following the financial crisis to many of these countries? Austerity, that was the go-to at first until countries like, you know what? I don't think this austerity thing is working. We need stimulus packages.
Absolutely.
Why don't they allow our governments to spend as well? Why is it that tightening the belt is always what is the go-to? I know it sounds good.
Absolutely.
You know, like if you're in a deficit, maybe you should spend less.
Yes.
But I don't know if that's how it works with actual governments. With an individual, maybe.
Yes.
But with a government, you know, control over people, I don't think so. That's just me, not even Money FM. That is my personal opinion on the issue. I know it's a sticky issue. That's why you have debates and discussions around it. But it just, you know, like you say, it just irks me that many times the one side of the story is the one that's seen.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So like,
for example, we've obviously had like the recent dollar debacle. Mm-hmm. And yes, I mean, there's so many statements that have actually come out. I would encourage everybody to just go to Bank of Zambia website and download, you know, like a 5-year historical, you know, historical data on how exactly the dollar rate has actually been performing.
Mm.
Yes, there are exogenous factors that are coming to play, but you tend to see patterns in the way the currency tends to actually behave. But then also, I'd encourage everybody to now listen to some of the statements that come out of Central Bank Governor as well, because he's got like he always has like a quarterly brief in terms of the state of the economy. economy, along, you know, which will give us the, you know, the MPC, you know, the MPC rate. You'd actually now be able to see that, you know, one of the factors that influences our dollar rate is the investment in foreign investment that comes in into our local bond market. So now, because of that, you know, you tend to find that, you know, the stock of debt is owned by, you know, like foreign or foreign investors. What that then now means is that, you know, if these guys want to call their debt, it means that, you know, movements in the currency would actually, you know, actually be felt. Yeah. But then again, it's double edged. Mm. On the other side, you have to ensure that, you know, fiscal issues are in line. So you know we always have to get our fiscal data right.
Sure. All right. We're going to move on from that story right now. My last story for you before you leave, since you are a man that looks at markets, have you been watching the international markets this October, particularly the Dow? They have had a bumpy October as far, eh?
Yes, they have. I haven't really been looking at the Dow, but it's a very interesting period right now for international markets.
Obviously, the trade war. Such a bullish market for the Dow for a long time.
Yes, and the Dow obviously hosts your technology stock. Now, what's obviously quite interesting, and which is one of the key enablers of some of the things that are going on, is obviously, you know, Trumponomics, Donald Trump against the world.
He called the Fed crazy this morning.
Oh, he did.
Yes,
oh,
he did.
Goodness.
He said
it's hard to keep tabs on him.
They upped their rates on Treasury bills.
Oh yes.
And he wasn't happy about that.
No, he obviously wasn't. But so you know, you've got the U.S.-China trade war that's obviously ensuing, and you know, Donald Trump obviously announces that, you know, there'll be a cap in terms of how much gets traded between you know, the U.S. and China. That obviously now causes problems for companies such as Apple, who have, you know, companies that are in their value chain that are based in China that supply equipment, or rather, you know, parts to, you know, to their iPhones and iPads.
Sure.
Yeah, so essentially that now causes problems. So now, when you look at the market and its volatility, unlike our market where there could be movement like that, but then, you know, it doesn't really shake the market, there, essentially, investors will obviously get worried about, you know, the security of their investment. So if you see stock actually moving down, you know that, okay, maybe there's been a bit of a sell-off. Guys are not too comfortable holding on to that stock. But I always tell people, you know, be like Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett always looks for the sweet spot in every company. So he'll invest in companies that have got a solid value proposition that is for the long term. I mean, this is a man that still has stock in Coca-Cola. He still drinks Coca-Cola every day. I mean, he's over 80, but then, you know, he's still, you know, he believed in not only the brand but in the company and how they managed it. So if you're looking at things from a long-term perspective, you'll notice that, you know, certain things will happen. Trade wars will come in, but then, you know, because of some of these bumpy rides, the value proposition of that company still remains intact.
Well, okay, so you say that, but then what would you report if that was the case then?
Right.
Well,
okay.
Well, I'm just being funny.
I know.
So let me read you a little bit of a summary. Okay. So here we go. The Dow plunged 832 points, or 3.2%, on Wednesday. Tech stocks also took a beating, as you were saying, sending the Nasdaq tumbling 4%, its worst day since the Brexit referendum of June 2016. Even Amazon dropped 6%. And actually, there was I saw a headline which went, Jeff Bezos loses $9.1 billion of value.
Yes, valuations. Valuations. Yeah.
So yes, interest rates in America are rising. It is a huge positive. The Federal Reserve is no longer popping up interest with near zero rates. The Fed has raised interest rates 8 times since late 2015. The 10 years. So what was that statement I wanted to? As interest rates rise, investors have been getting out of bonds, driving down their price and driving up their yields. Okay. Investors are worried that the investments will be less profitable over time if inflation picks up. In fact, that's something I'd like you to come. Well, maybe next week.
Can you talk about
treasury bills and
I could talk about that, but just to touch on that one. Yeah. And I'm looking here at an article that's on CNN. Okay. And obviously, because on Financial Insight, we don't cover international companies. Our focus is truly Zambia, and we focus on Zambian companies.
But I'm guessing you cut your teeth. looking at the international markets.
Absolutely, then, yes, yes, exactly. Because you know, we learn a lot from there. And yeah. essentially, obviously, yes, the recent rate hike has obviously gotten investors a bit panicky. Hmm. What the rate hike does is obviously it increases the cost of capital.
Yeah.
And for technology companies, these are companies that invest heavily in R&D. And if you're going to invest heavily in R&D, it means a lot of, you know, tons of cash get invested. How these companies do it, some would do it organically, some would raise equity, etc. So, you know, depending on the source of financing, if the money becomes a bit more expensive, it means that, you know, some companies might choose to shy away. And if they shy away from R&D, it means that, you know, they'll not be as innovative as they sure. should be, meaning that, you know, value proposition is not really protected in the long term. So that's the reason why, you know, this technology stock actually plunged like this.
There was a whole discussion about this recently, which I'm gonna talk about with Ali. But the lady, I forget her name, she wrote a book speaking about how. Just to give you some context here, it was a whole thing. She was talking about how governments should be given a stake in many companies because of what they do to facilitate R&D for many of these tech firms. She was like, Apple, for instance, has the American government to help for touchscreen technology.
Yes.
She mentioned a couple of things. I have the article. Oh, yeah. So her whole thing was, should countries profit from the profits of the big tech companies, right, which benefit from R&D, which the government facilitates.
Right.
So I wonder, where does this come into with, like, you know, as you speak about the treasury bills and government bonds, stuff like that?
Right.
Really, the question I'm asking, especially in these developed countries, what role does their government play in right. their business sector? Is that a huge topic in
right.
itself?
Right. No, it is a huge topic in itself. But one thing that comes to mind when you read that that article is the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. military is literally responsible for most of the technology.
Oh, the internet itself.
The internet itself.
Yes, internet itself.
So
yeah.
therein is why many would actually argue that maybe some of these companies who have been beneficiaries of some of the the R&D that mm-hmm. went, you know, that came from the military, financed by the U.S. government, that, you know, these guys now need to start, you know, giving back in a way.
As it were. Yeah.
But yes, I
of course, taxes come in. True.
Yes, they're true. Taxes come in. But I always feel that, you know, the role of government obviously should be distant, but then distant to a certain extent. We don't want to remain in the dark ages. We want to ensure that, you know, we're always a step ahead. And, you know, Africa has been in a fantastic position to leapfrog many stages of our evolution. But that being the case, it gets to a point where some of these companies have gotten so big that they've got humongous budgets which can rally, you know, like rival, you know, the government's thing. I mean, you've got companies that have, you know, compared to like GDPs of some, you know, some African countries
itself,
multiple times. Yeah. So essentially what that means is that the balance of power is more or less shifted. What government now needs to then now, governments need to focus on is they need to focus on ensuring that they're passing policies that will ensure that most of these companies are kept in line and they're not breaching, human values, for example.
Sure.
Just ensuring that, you know, like that they have policies that continue to foster technology so that we can make this a better world.
Okay, you know what? I'm not going to keep you anymore.
Yeah.
I've already gone over 7:30.
Yeah.
There's so much we can talk about.
You
brought up something which I could have talked about again when you spoke about how Zambian African countries have leapt some certain... Well, okay, you know what? No, I'll resist temptation.
I gotta go. I'm bidding by the hour.
Yes, you do. Thank you so much for coming, Wello. You've been such a great... you've been very an insightful help for me today.
All right.
So we're expecting to have you again next week for, I'm presuming, 3 hours this time, right?
No, it was chill. It was great for you guys having me.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I mentioned to Jason yesterday, I'm really looking forward to partnering up with you.
For sure.
So Financial Insider, Money FM, going places.
Yeah.
And,
probably a couple of guest articles from Money FM.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, so I'd just like to wish everybody a good evening and, live long and prosper.
Excellent. Yeah, I wish you a good evening too. So guys, this will be the end of my segment with Wello Chibesekunda for this evening. If you want to join us again, we'll have Financial Insights with us again next week, Thursday, on the Money Night Show. It may not be Wello, but I'm sure whoever he sends will also be a trustworthy person in his stead. So If you want to comment on anything I have spoken about with him or any of the news stories I spoke about, I'm going to talk about a couple more at 8 o'clock with Ali. Please call in 0211-252-227. The WhatsApp line is 0967-144-220. And our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter are all Money FM Zambia, or use the hashtag Money Night Show. Mwelo, I wish you a good evening.
Thanks, Chilo.